It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 39 degrees under fair skies. West winds at 15 out at the airport, where they have 10 miles of visibility. There are still some icy patches out there, so continue to have a care walking and driving. Coming up on the Midday Report, there's a bear hanging out near the college, maybe a grumpy one. Kodiak has been named a top place to visit by a travel blog. And Ketchikan said goodbye this weekend to one of its most historic buildings after an arson fire. Those stories, plus an Anchorage jury has convicted a man of murdering three people in a botched robbery. And the Alaska ACLU is calling Alaska's prison system to task.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The five Republican candidates facing off in tonight's presidential primary debate in Florida are each vying to be seen as a possible alternative to Donald Trump. The former president remains the clear front-runner. NPR Sarah McCammon reports former United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley will be closely watched.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis had been seen as the most likely alternative to former President Trump, but former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley has made an unexpectedly strong showing in recent polls and is making a major push in the early voting states of Iowa and New Hampshire. Tom Rath is a longtime Republican leader in New Hampshire. He says Haley needs to make the case to voters that she's more than just a good second choice.
She can't sell herself as an alternative to Trump. She's got to sell herself as, I am the best candidate for this party at this time in this race.
A total of five Republicans have qualified for this, the third GOP primary debate. Trump is skipping it and holding his own event nearby. Sarah McCammon, NPR News.
Trump's eldest daughter, Ivanka Trump, took the witness stand in her father's civil fraud trial in New York today. She's no longer a defendant in this case, unlike her father and two eldest brothers, but the prosecution alleges Ivanka Trump was a central figure in her father's scheme to inflate the value of his assets to secure favorable terms on bank loans and insurance. The war between Israel and Hamas is in its second month, and the death toll in Gaza continues to climb. Many human rights groups are calling for a ceasefire, but the U.S. wants what it's calling humanitarian pause. Here's NPR's Rachel Treisman.
A ceasefire is when both parties agree to end the military phase of a conflict, typically as part of a political process. A pause would stop the fighting in an area for a limited time to help civilians there. The leaders of both Israel and the U.S. are opposed to a ceasefire. They say it would just allow Hamas to regroup. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says there can be no cessation in the fighting, however temporary, until Hamas releases all the hostages it took last month. The Biden administration seems to disagree. It's now pushing Israel to consider humanitarian pauses to help get aid in and hostages out of Gaza. The White House says Biden and Netanyahu discussed the possibility on Monday and are set to talk again in the coming days. Rachel Treisman, NPR News.
In the era of rising interest rates, one in three home buyers is opting to pay all cash. That's according to a new study out today by the real estate company Redfin. Chen Zhao, who leads Redfin's economic data team, says that in September, cash for homes purchases rose 29.5% from a year earlier.
A lot of homeowners are sitting on a ton of equity that they have built up because prices have gone up so much. And maybe they're moving to a more affordable location. So maybe they have a home in the San Francisco Bay Area, and now they're moving to, you know, Denver, Colorado.
Ms. Zhao says the findings also reflect ongoing economic and racial disparities in home ownership. This is NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. There's a bear in the woods near Kodiak College. It was first seen on Monday night at a dumpster. An email sent to college staff on Tuesday said that it was growling at people and may be aggressive. Kodiak police sent an officer to confirm reports, and a representative for the department said in a phone call they found scattered trash on the campus but did not make contact with the bear. The representative said this is typical for this time of year and that it's a reminder to stay aware of bears, even in city limits. Kodiak was named a top place to visit in the world by the travel blog TravelLemming.com. The website listed Kodiak number 8 on its list of top 50 places to visit behind tropical cities in Vietnam and Mexico. In the United States, Kodiak was ranked right behind Memphis, Tennessee. The blog post commended the Alaska's Emerald Isle for its beaches, mountain hiking, museums, wildlife viewing, and fishing. An Anchorage jury convicted a man on Monday of murdering three people in a 2017 shooting at the Spinard Gold business. The decision comes 3 years after the state's first case against him ended in a mistrial. 49-year-old Anthony Pisano was convicted of murdering Bullion Brothers co-owner Stephen Cook, as well as Kenneth Hartman and Daniel McCready, who lived in the same building. The jury took less than a week to decide Pisano's fate after the jury from his first trial couldn't reach a verdict. In closing arguments Thursday, Anchorage District Attorney Brittany Dunlop said Pisano had shot Cook in a botched robbery. She said Pisano had also shot Hartman and McCready when they ran to the scene from nearby apartments to investigate. Pisano's attorney, Kevin Fitzgerald, told jurors the state's star witness was responsible for the shooting. He claimed Michael Dupree, the store's co-owner, who testified that he fought with Pisano and then ran, had shot Cook instead, leading Pisano to kill the other two men in self-defense. Pisano was set to be sentenced in May. Ketchikan said goodbye this weekend to a beloved building. The scorched remains of the American Legion Hall downtown was demolished after a catastrophic fire. Jack Darrell of KRBD has the story.
It took a bulldozer nearly 2 days to remove the charred debris in the corner of the building that survived the September fire. An onlooker said it was painful to watch. City of Ketchikan spokeswoman Kim Simpson says the building was the heart of the community in location, history, and availability for fundraising and other events beyond the Legion. It was also the first American Legion post in the state of Alaska. Joseph Shacker Jr. is accused of setting the fire. He's charged with first-degree arson and reckless endangerment. Shacker's sister, Ivy Smith, says the fire is a tragedy, and so is the lack of mental health resources in Ketchikan. She says Shacker suffers from mental illness and had tried to get treatment on multiple occasions. Hours after the demolition began on Saturday, members of the Ketchikan American Legion were at the Ted Ferry Civic Center to receive the Alaska Airlines Exemplary Community Service Award. Former Alaska commander of the American Legion, Hunter Davis, teared up as he spoke to the packed crowd. He said they'll rebuild, and when they do, they'll welcome the community through their doors, as they always have. A fundraising campaign on GoFundMe.com is aimed at helping rebuild the American Legion Hall. To please help Ketchikan rebuild what took veterans generations to build. Shacker is currently being held in Anchorage awaiting trial. It's set for January 8th in Ketchikan. Here in Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
There's incarceration, and then there's what the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska calls decarceration, a nationwide movement to reduce the number of people in prison, an effort it says is a life-or-death matter in Alaska. At a recent fundraiser, the ACLU again called attention to the high death rate in Alaska prisons, and as KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports, it also claims the state is misleading Alaskans about the actual death toll.
The event was called Decarcerated, and it packed a room with hundreds of people who came to learn more about the incarcerated.
The natives in prison did not get there by accident.
Tom Abel, a Haida from Southeast Alaska, was the keynote speaker.
We get arrested in disproportionate numbers. That's how it begins. Racism used to flourish in the not-too-distant past, and it still exists.
J. Allen Stevens. Mark Christopher Cook Jr.
Mark Cook Jr. was Tom Abel's grandson, among the names read during a remembrance of Alaska inmates who died in the past 2 years. His family has sued the Department of Corrections over his death at Lemon Creek this April. Abel says his grandson struggled with mental health problems and suffered from extreme back pain, which Abel believes the department failed to treat and ultimately led his grandson to take his life.
This is genocide in its most heinous form.
Out of a record 18 inmate deaths last year, almost half were Alaska Native. DOC hasn't released information on the racial makeup of 2023's numbers, but Abel wants an independent investigation of all Alaska prison deaths because he says he doesn't want any other family to go through what his has experienced. The Alaska ACLU has also joined a separate wrongful death lawsuit against the Department of Corrections filed in August by the family of James Ryder over his suicide last year. Megan Barker with the Alaska ACLU says Ryder's death was very similar to how Abel's grandson died.
His death stemmed from a medical emergency that was not treated, and it led to him taking his own life. From that, we know it was a preventable death. If he had gotten the medical care that he needed, very much that he could still be here today.
Jimmy Singri.
Louis Jordan, Jr.
Singri was 49 and Jordan, 53. Both died in April, just days apart. The ACLU says Singri was transported to the hospital brain dead and kept alive in hopes of donating his organs. Jordan was in a coma. The men had been released from DOC custody. The ACLU says it learned of these deaths from the inmates' families. And when asked for a comment, the Department of Corrections would neither confirm nor deny the inmate deaths, the ACLU says, went unreported. In a statement, the department said it only reports those deaths that are within its institutional custody. DOC says when the state court system releases them, it's no longer its responsibility to track the inmates, nor does it have access to their information once they're out of the correction department's custody.
They're trying to skirt responsibility and trying to not have to be accountable for the practices and the conditions that are leading to outrageous numbers of Alaskans dying.
Angelina McCord.
McCord was the third inmate death that the ACLU says went unreported this year. She died at the Highland Mountain Correctional Center last month at the age of 29. The DOC has only reported 8 inmate deaths for 2023, but the ACLU says McCord was the 11th to die.
I think it's wrong.
McCord's mother, Angel Standifer, says DOC should be required to report all inmate deaths, whether they happen in prison or at the hospital. Standifer wants a complete accounting of the circumstances surrounding her daughter's death so she and her family can move on.
It is really painful. Some days I can't get up. Sometimes I don't want to get up.
Standifer says her daughter had her struggles but seemed to be turning around. Her nickname was Lena, a young woman who loved basketball and volleyball. Her mother says she also coached Native Youth Olympics in her home village of Tyonek, where she had worked as a Head Start teacher and helped her dad with commercial fishing.
Her dad would always say she was his first son, and she would always go out moose hunting and help us butcher the moose, and she always helped her family, no matter what.
The ACLU says had it not been for Angelina McCord's family, it would not have found out about her death. Megan Edge, who oversees the ACLU's Alaska Prison Project, says the ACLU acknowledges that inmates have not led perfect lives, but says the lack of acknowledgement about their deaths is disturbing.
It's just a refusal to acknowledge that the people that are dying are people.
The ACLU says in order to reduce the death toll, it's important to know the full picture, which should include the location of inmate deaths and the 11th-hour custody changes, because otherwise there is no way to know exactly how many inmates have died, a problem the ACLU says could be far worse than we know. As for the ACLU's allegations, the DOC says while it appreciates the public's concern, DOC takes all matters regarding the welfare of those in our care seriously and cannot comment on allegations from outside sources. The department has said one of the reasons the inmate death toll has gone up is due to an aging prison population and the increasingly poor health of those who enter the system due to poverty and addiction. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
A new 150-bed shelter opened at the end of last month in Anchorage in an unused city building. It was supposed to be the final piece of the city's emergency cold weather shelter plan for this winter. Last week, Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea found it surprisingly empty, but with fresh snow and colder weather coming, that's changing fast.
Inside the former administration building for Anchorage's trash utility, a large vehicle bay has been converted into a sleeping space. A few days after the shelter opened, only a couple dozen of the 150 cots here are claimed.
So it is very empty.
Crystal Abbott works for Henning Incorporated, the nonprofit with contracts to run Anchorage's three main winter shelter sites, including this converted city building.
I know when the sun is out and it's still kind of warm and there is a congregate shelter, they don't usually come until it gets too cold or it starts snowing.
Congregate basically means the beds are in a shared common space, as opposed to individual rooms or apartments. Henning is running two other winter shelters for the city that are non-congregate. They're in hotels. And those rooms, they did fill quickly after opening. Abbott says a lot of the people on the wait list don't want to go into the group shelter.
So I know a lot of them are couples who want to stay together in their room. So they will wait until a room becomes available. They stay on the list.
That lines up with results of a survey the Anchorage Coalition to End Homelessness ran in September and October at outreach events. Respondents said they strongly preferred a more private space. And separation from a significant other was the most common reason those surveyed gave as a barrier to going into shelter. That was followed by a disability or mobility challenge, and then pets, which generally aren't allowed in the hotels. There are smaller rooms set aside for pets in this shelter.
A lot of the people at the camps will not come in and leave their dogs there because nobody wants to leave their babies outside.
Henning also ran the mass shelter inside the Sullivan Arena last winter. Around 500 people would fill the cots and crowd into an overflow warming area on the coldest days.
In the beginning of Sullivan, we were slow to open, and then we got fairly full fairly fast. So I believe that's what's going to happen here too.
On Sunday and Monday, about 7 inches of snow fell in Anchorage, and as Abbott predicted, a lot more of the cots inside were filled. With more snow in the forecast and plenty of winter to come, she thinks it's just a matter of time and temperature until they hit capacity. Sean Steich is one of the people with a cot at the shelter.
After the COVID hit, then the rent prices went skyrocket. I can't pay $1,300 for a one-bedroom apartment, so I got expedited out of the place, and I've been homeless ever since.
As the city closed the mass shelter at the Sullivan Arena, officials and nonprofits were creating hundreds of new affordable apartments that opened this summer by converting hotel rooms into permanent housing. Despite that, demand for temporary winter shelter appears to be much higher than last winter. Likely factor in that demand? Dramatic increases in the average rent in Anchorage. According to state data, the average rent for a one-bedroom apartment in Anchorage is $1,278. That's up nearly 20% since before the pandemic. As rent becomes less affordable, that directly contributes to more people becoming homeless. Researchers studying pre-pandemic national data found specific thresholds of unaffordability that predict homelessness. They published an academic paper in 2021 about their findings. In a summary about the work, which was based off of 2018 data, the researchers flagged Anchorage as being at especially high risk of homelessness taking off if rents increased or poverty worsened. Syke grew up in Anchorage and went to East Anchorage High School. He says he spent the last 7 months or so mostly camping outdoors on a hill near the Alaska Railroad Depot in downtown Anchorage.
You go by Ship Creek and you look up that hill, that's all you see is trouble. I mean, everybody is back and forth, passing deals, drugs. I mean, and if you want to have a good life, you wouldn't want to hang down there. And I was tired of watching over my back.
After one night in the shelter, he's already feeling better.
I felt a lot more safer, warmer, and I didn't have to worry about being stolen from in the middle of the night.
Steich has worked in a lot of downtown restaurants as a dishwasher. He says he hopes to use the shelter as a stepping stone, stay out of the cold, get back to work, and get back into an apartment of his own. In Anchorage, with help from Matt Fabian, I'm Jeremy Shea.
A coalition of hemp growers and manufacturers has sued the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, claiming that new limits on intoxicating hemp products are unconstitutional. The Alaska Beacon reports that the Alaska Industrial Hemp Association and four businesses filed the lawsuit last Thursday in U.S. District Court in Anchorage. Attorney Christopher Hoke represents the plaintiffs and said the rules mean that virtually every hemp-derived product made in the state and for sale here, drinks, gummies, cookies, and more, will become illegal. He has requested a temporary restraining order to keep the ban from coming into effect while the lawsuit proceeds. The DNR, its commissioner, the state director of agriculture, and Lieutenant Governor Nancy Dahlstrom have been named in the lawsuit, but have not yet filed a preliminary response to the complaint. The lawsuit stems from a regulation approved in October by Dahlstrom at the behest of the DNR. The regulation took effect on Friday and says that DNR may not approve, quote, an industrial hemp product that contains Delta 9 THC, close quote.
Mortgage rates are on their way down. I'm Novosafa with a Marketplace Minute. The Mortgage Bankers Association says the average interest rate on a 30-year fixed home loan declined last week to around 7.6%. Just last month, it reached near 8%. The decline comes as interest rates on bonds have receded. Mortgage rates track bond yields. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau wants to supervise digital payment systems such as Apple Pay and Google Pay. A proposed rule would allow the agency to examine practices at providers in the same way it scrutinizes credit cards. The Federal Trade Commission is challenging more than 100 medical patents. Many might be blocking cheaper versions of asthma inhalers and auto-injectors, which are used to treat severe allergic reactions. I'm Novosafa with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 8th day of November, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 8:39. It will set again at 5:06. That will give us 8 hours and 27 minutes of precious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes, and I'm guessing 28 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 54 degrees set in 1946, and our record low was 14 set in 1969. It is currently 39 degrees under fair skies in Kodiak. It's a pretty nice day, much nicer than predicted. The Weather Service says 30% chance of rain until 3 and mostly cloudy skies today with a high near 43 and light northwest winds increasing to 15 this afternoon. They're calling for a 20% chance of rain before 9 p.m. tonight, mostly cloudy overnight too, with a low of 35, west winds to 20. And partly sunny skies tomorrow, high near 38, southwest winds to 15, gusting to 20. Currently at the airport, it's 10 miles of visibility and west winds to 15. Looking at our local tides, we have an outgoing tide. The tide turned rather recently, about 11 a.m. Our next low tide here on the west side will happen at, on the east side will happen at 5:06 p.m. and be 2.4 feet, followed by a high tide at 10:55 p.m. of 6.7 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 5:44 p.m. and be 3.3 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 11:30 p.m. of 11 feet. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side out to 15 nautical miles offshore. Gale warning for tonight and Thursday, northwest 15, becoming west 40 tonight, 12-foot seas coming down to 10 feet tonight. And for tomorrow, west 35 are expected to come down to 25 in the afternoon, seas to 12 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for tonight and tomorrow. Northeast 20, becoming west 30 tonight. 5-foot seas building to 7 feet tonight in the Shelikof. And for tomorrow on our west side, west 25, seas to 6 feet. The Kodiak City Council will be having a regular meeting tomorrow. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. Packets and meeting agenda can be found at the Kodiak City of website. They are also streaming from that website, and you can also listen to it live right here on KMXT on 100.1 FM at 7:30 tomorrow evening. Also tomorrow evening, the Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. There will be an interactive health fair featuring Fat Bears with a Kodiak twist tomorrow at the Kodiak High School. View Fat Bear art and photography of local artists. Visit a variety of booths. Donate canned goods to the local Brother Francis shelter. Dispose of used sharps. Get your flu vaccine. Bring your kiddo's favorite stuffed animal for a checkup and be entered to win prizes and much more. It's free, it's open to all ages, and it's tomorrow starting at 5 p.m. going through 7:30 p.m. right up here at the Kodiak High School. Things going on at the library include the library's Bridge Club. That meets Mondays at 1 p.m. All are welcome. The library will be closed on Friday, November 10th for Veterans Day, but open on November 11th, the actual Veterans Day. On Saturday, November 11th, at 1 p.m., they're having Crafternoon. Participants will make a pie banner for the Thanksgiving holiday. It's for teens and adults. Again, that's Saturday at 1 p.m., Crafternoon. Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m. is the famous Lego Club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. And, of course, tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. is the preschool story time. That's for kids ages 3 to 6, 10:30 a.m. tomorrow. Library hours are Mondays, Fridays, and Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Tuesdays and Thursdays, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. The Gather and Grow workshops continue. Learn how to build stronger connections with the people you care about and with yourself in this free series of courses, and that's happening on Thursday at 5:30 p.m., goes through 7 p.m. at the Kodiak Island Housing Authority Family Center on 2815 Woody Way. Child care, supplies, and dinner are all provided. If you have any questions, contact Ellamy Tiller at 907-486-6171. But again, the next one is tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Island Housing Authority Family Center. Notice is hereby given that members of the Board of Education will be attending the Association of Alaska School Boards 70th Annual Conference and Leadership Institute in Anchorage. That began November 8th today. That begins today, goes through the 12th. There are no official items scheduled for discussion, and the Board will not be taking any actions. For more information, contact Jamie Bennett, Interim Secretary to the Board of Education at 907-486-7552. Join Diet and the Love Soldiers and the Kodiak Arts Council Tuesday, November 14th at 4 p.m. for their community outreach, music from an indigenous perspective with a workshop and performance. Diet will be guiding the community through a musical encounter of indigenous identity and understanding. Using a combination of traditional stories and songs and movement, Diet seeks to build an appreciation of indigenous music. This event is free for middle school students, high school students, and adults at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium's band room. For more information, go to the Kodiak Arts Council's website at www.kodiakarts.org. But again, that is next Tuesday, November the 14th at 4 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium Band Room. Sounds like a lot of fun. The Salvation Army's Doing the Most Good program, providing Christmas baskets and toys to Kodiak kids from lower-income families, is gearing up to get the giving going. Qualification appointments will be taken from November 27th to December 1st and December 4th through the 8th. To make an appointment, call 907-486-8740. At your appointment, you will need a picture ID for the adults in your household, ID for each child, birth certificate or something like that, rent receipt or partial rent or rent agreement, proof of income, and a proof of physical address.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.